This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by panorama and then our feature of culture and society. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to young people. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis is continuing with his convalescence at his residence of Casa Santa Marta. He is also undergoing his continued treatment, mobility and respiratory-related physiotherapy, especially for voice recovery. On the sidelines of the treatment, the Holy Father has personal prayers and concelebrates Mass in the chapel of his residence. This is according to the Holy See Press Office in the most recent updates on the health of the Pope on March 25th. Meantime, the Church on Thursday, 27th March, commemorated the 5th anniversary of the historic Stasio Obis prayer of Pope Francis, which was at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Reflecting on this day, the editorial director of Vatican Radio, Andrea Tonielli, reminded the entire world that 5 years have passed since Pope Francis ascended the steps of St. Peter's Basilica alone on a rainy evening. The square was dramatically empty, even though millions of people around the world were tuned in to him, glued to their television screens, still locked inside the long quarantine of the lockdown, frightened by the invisible virus that was claiming many victims, taking them away to the intensive care units of hospitals without relatives being able to see them, greet them, or even hold funerals for them. Tonielli goes on to say that with that gesture, with that prayer, and with the daily mass from the chapel of the Casa Santa Marta, the success of Peter made himself close to everyone. He embraced all of them in the emptiness of the square, in the blessing with the Blessed Sacrament, in the simple act of kissing the feet of the crucifix, which seemed to weep because it was exposed to the harsh weather of an extreme early spring evening. Our editorial director concluded his reflection by saying that we are no longer in quarantine and now the situation has reversed, adding that the square is once again filled with people who are now celebrating the Jubilee, and this is while the Bishop of Rome, who prays for us and for peace from his room at the Casa Santa Marta, is absent, convalescing from a serious pneumonia. Yet, Tonielli adds, that connection has not been broken, and his words from that day are more relevant than ever. Even today, especially today, it is the time to choose what counts and what passes. The permanent observer of the Holy See to the Organization of American States, OAS, Archbishop Juan Antonio Cruz Serrano, has called for unanimous efforts to eradicate the scourge of modern slavery. His call came in a statement when he addressed the Permanent Council of the Organization of American States on the occasion of the commemoration of the International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Slavery and the Transatlantic Slave Trade, observed every year on March 25th. If we close our eyes and ears to this phenomenon today, he said, we too will be accomplices in it. Christopher Wells has this report.
Recalling the words of Pope Francis, Archbishop Cruz Serrano said that slavery objectifies men and women who are reduced to things that are valued in proportion to their usefulness to others. The Archbishop noted that the Council was meeting during the 8th Inter-American Week for People of African Descent in the Americas, which he said helps us recognize the gravity of these facts and the scope of the reality of modern slavery. This should provide motivation to continue raising awareness about the issue and to better coordinate efforts to combat human trafficking. These efforts, the Archbishop said, should be unanimous in order to eradicate this scourge. It is therefore necessary, he continued, to launch processes to achieve the peaceful harmony that is required between peoples in which the recognition of human dignity occupies a central place. He assured his audience of the Holy See's commitment to moral, social, and spiritual education that incorporates the experiences of the most marginalized, including victims of human trafficking, who are often unseen and unheard. Finally, Archbishop Cruz Serrano affirmed the Holy See's commitment to guaranteeing adequate conditions of education and formation in order to generate a more just society in the fraternal recognition of our common humanity. I'm Christopher Wells.
Nigerian priest Father John Ubaechu, who was kidnapped a couple of days ago, has been released. The Archdiocese of Owerri made this announcement on Thursday, 26th March, in a statement signed by the Chancellor and Secretary of the Archdiocese, Father Patrick Mbara. Issued early on Thursday, March 27th, the statement said that Father Ubaechu was freed on Wednesday, March 26th. "We thank God for His infinite mercy and for answering our prayers. We appreciate your fraternal solidarity and prayers. To God be the glory," the statement concluded. Father Ubaechu was kidnapped on the evening of Sunday, March 23, at Ejemekuru, while traveling to Owerri for the annual retreat of priests in the Owerri Archdiocese. Grave violations against children have surged across Sudan's Darfur states since the start of the year. This alarm has been raised by the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, that says that 110 violations are verified in North Darfur alone. It says further that there is also a staggering 83% increase in child casualties in Sudan compared to the first quarter of 2024. In Al-Fashir in North Darfur, more than 70 children have been killed or maimed in less than 3 months. Since early 2025, intense shelling and airstrikes in the Zamzam camp for internally displaced people have resulted in 16% of all verified child casualties in Al-Fashir. In fact, an estimated 825,000 children are trapped in a growing catastrophe in and around Al-Fashir, said UNICEF representative for Sudan, Sheldon Yet, who made estimations that 500,000 children are at immediate risk if supplies cannot be delivered. UNICEF is therefore calling on all parties in the conflict to facilitate safe and impeded humanitarian access so that life-saving aid can reach children in Al-Fashir, Zamzam, and other affected areas. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
In an escalating political tensions, the first vice president of South Sudan, Riek Machar, has been placed under house arrest in the country's capital, Juba. His party, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, says an armed convoy led by senior security officials, including the defense minister, stormed Machar's residence late on Wednesday and disarmed his bodyguards. His wife, Interior Minister Angelina Ten, was also detained. The government has not yet commented, but the United Nations warns that South Sudan is at risk of returning to civil war. Tensions between Machar and President Salva Kiir have been rising for weeks, threatening to unravel the 2018 peace deal that ended a brutal five-year conflict which claimed nearly 400,000 lives. The military ruler of Niger, General Abdurrahman Tchiani, has been sworn in as president for a five-year transitional period. He seized power in 2023 after ousting elected President Mohamed Bazoum. Under a new charter replacing Niger's constitution, General Tchiani was also promoted to the highest military rank in the country and signed a decree dissolving all political parties. He emphasized his commitment to leading the nation with humility. The five-year transition period is described as flexible, depending on security situation in Niger, which has long been plagued by jihadist attacks, one of the key reasons cited for the coup. Niger follows a trend of military takeovers in West Africa, joining Mali, Guinea, and Burkina Faso. These nations have cut ties with France and moved closer to Russia, with all except Guinea withdrawing from the regional bloc of the Economic Community of West Africa States, ECOWAS. Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has declared the capital Khartoum free from parliamentary rapid support forces after nearly 2 years of war. Speaking from the parliamentary palace, which had been under the control of the rapid support forces, Burhan marked the army's significant victory. The military has been advancing rapidly, reclaiming key state institutions and bridges over the River Nile. Reports indicate that rapid support forces fighters are retreating southward. The president of Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has dismissed the army chief, General Anslem Sanyantwe, in what analysts say is an attempt to secure his hold on power amid rising fears of a coup. This marks the third major security shakeup in recent months, with Mnangagwa also removing the police and intelligence chiefs. Mnangagwa, who took power in 2017 after a military coup removed the late President Robert Mugabe from leadership, faces growing unrest within his ruling party, the Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front. Former allies, including war veterans, accuse him of worsening Zimbabwe's economic crisis and trying to extend his ruling beyond 2028. They have called for nationwide protests on March 31st to demand his resignation. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. In this edition today, we focus on the Jubilee 2025. The 2025 Jubilee of Hope officially started with the opening of the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica on 24th December 2024. This Jubilee 2025 is the 27th Ordinary Universal Jubilee in the history of the Church, and the second Jubilee celebrated by the current Pope after the extraordinary one of 2015. The entire Jubilee period is characterized by a rich calendar of religious, cultural, and social events. In addition to the celebrations and rituals addressed to all the faithful, the whole year is marked by several Jubilees dedicated to different categories of people who are identified according to specific professions or their role within the family, the church, and in society. Each one includes moments of discussion and spirituality, with a concluding mass initially scheduled to be celebrated by the Holy Father. The days from 20th to 31st March are dedicated to the Jubilee of Missionaries of Mercy. This 60th major Jubilee event will bring together 500 plus priests, missionaries of mercy from all over the world, accompanied by their families and collaborators. Pope Francis, who has returned to the Casa Santa Marta after more than a month of hospitalization at Rome's Gemelli Hospital, will not be able to attend, but is expected to send a written message to them. As they prepared for the official opening of their event, some of the priests attending the Jubilee of Missionaries of Mercy spoke to Vatican Radio to give their sentiments about this special occasion. Father Bernard Ovzeski is from the Diocese of St. George's in Grenada.
I think that one of the keys for me is the connection between the institution of the Missionaries of Mercy during the Jubilee Year of Mercy, and now the ordinary Jubilee being a Jubilee of Hope. Without mercy, there is no hope. And so I see a direct connection between the faculties, the powers that the Pope has entrusted to Missionaries of Mercy to be able to bring hope into the lives of people who felt trapped by sin, who felt that they were alienated from the church, and in our role as missionaries of that mercy of God, to be able to provide that hope and look to a future which is filled with expectation rather than dread.
Monsignor Ted Bethany is from Jamaica, and he spoke to Vatican Radio about how he has experienced the aspect of hope which is the theme of the 2025 Jubilee Year.
I think not only in terms of the Sacrament of Reconciliation, which was the original impetus of Pope Francis's push for mercy, was that all of us came together and he brought 1,000 missionaries of mercy from all over the world to come together and share in that gift of mercy, which is experienced through reconciliation. And I think some of the strength of that, and part of what happens is when you are reconciled, you bring yourself back into the community. The community welcomes you back as the prodigal son, so you become part of that community. And one of the gifts of bringing all of the missionaries of mercy from all over the world back to Rome at this time is that you experience that together as a brotherhood, as a fraternity. So all of us then become a family, brothers, who share in that grace that Pope Francis initially shared with us, and we build each other up. So it's an opportunity for us being together here in Rome to share our experiences with one another and learn, not only learn, but also grow spiritually together as we also even reconcile. And one of the things on the agenda is going to be just praying together in church as missionaries of mercy, and that we ask for the grace of the Spirit to help us in our ministry as missionaries of mercy, and then draw from the strength of community, which is also built up, as Father Bernard mentioned, through our faith and through our charity, our love.
Meantime, dioceses all over the world are living the 2025 Jubilee of Hope in styles that are compatible with their own local context. The Catholic Archdiocese of Abuja in Nigeria has just celebrated the Jubilee of the Armed Forces. During the gathering to conclude the event, the security officials were encouraged to diligently carry out their duties and hold on to hope, especially in the face of difficulties. From Abuja in Nigeria, Josephine Asu sent us this report.
The special celebration was for the police, paramilitary, and other Catholic security men and women in the Archdiocese. It took place at the Nigerian Immigration Service Headquarters, Airport Road, Abuja. In his homily, CSP Reverend Father Richard Edet heralded the work of security officials, pointing out that the society often frowns at the bad apples but hardly appreciates the earnest work of those who are committed to service.
When they see police collecting money on the road, that's the kind of pictures my friends will post to me, that look at what your men are doing. And I will post back, maybe us cracking kidnappers' train, and as they look at big achievement. Nobody talks about our achievement. Nobody praises us for not allowing illegal immigrants to enter this country. Nobody praises us for taking correctional service, that those people that come out from prison are coming out well established. They will always tell you that some people left prison few months, few days ago and went and robbed somewhere. Nobody will tell us what the civil defense are doing and curbing crime everywhere. They will only look at them, the bad side of it. And other security agencies, people seem to look at us from that negative aspect.
He then outlined the best ways to survive in their line of duty and called on the Catholic officials to key into the Jubilee Year of Hope.
And what do we do? We must encourage ourselves. Uniform men and women maintain hope through their faith. If you have faith in God, always be very prayerful, be purposeful, show comradeship, endure hardship with one another.
A special guest and Muslim cleric, Usman Muhammad, was given an opportunity to speak to the congregation, and he said he was inspired by the message of hope.
And also the lecture given from one of our father here of hope. In fact, when he was giving the lecture, I was so happy. And from there, I said in my mind that is going to be the topic of the sermon of this week when we are doing our Jumat prayer. So I'm so happy, and I pray that this unity that you have started working on, may God continue to give us strength in it. And may God continue to give us the spirit of tolerance among ourselves. May we continue to understand that all of us, we are brothers and sisters from Adam and Eve. Thank you so much.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine Asu reporting.
That was a focus on the 2025 Jubilee of Hope. And that is all we have time for today in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, News for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. The Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors is currently holding its annual plenary assembly in the Vatican. In a message to the participants in the March 24th to the 28th meeting, Pope Francis encouraged the Commission to continue its precious work to ensure that the Church is a safe place for children and vulnerable adults. Abuse prevention is not a blanket to be spread over emergencies, but one of the foundations on which to build communities faithful to the gospel, said the Pope in the message released a few days before he was discharged from Rome's Gemelli Hospital. The Pope also emphasized the critical importance of helping survivors of abuse in their healing process. The Commission released its first annual report on church policies and procedures for safeguarding in October last year, 10 years after it was established by Pope Francis. One of the main speakers during the presentation of the report was Maud de Bois Bukikio, a jurist in charge of the annual report. The Dutch member of the Commission previously served as UN Special Rapporteur on the sale of children, child prostitution and child pornography. Let us listen in to what she said about the main sections of the report and about the image of the baobab tree on the front page of the report.
Because of the Commission's global purview, this report and its subsequent editions are uniquely positioned to work towards providing a comprehensive account of the policies and procedures across each of the capillary realities of the Church. In its first section, it focuses on the safeguarding practices of the local churches, there where Catholics live out their day-to-day lives around the world, in their parishes and communities, and place their trust. The second section focuses on trends across the continental regions, providing an insight into the regional variations of the response to abuse in its manifold manifestations. The third section focuses on the safeguarding practices of the dicasteries of the Roman Curia in an attempt to promote an all-of-government approach to safeguarding for the universal church. And finally, the fourth section focuses on the church entities operating in the broader society as they aim to serve populations also outside the church. Based on my experience as the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Sexual Exploitation of Children, reporting to the UN Governance, General Assembly and Human Rights Council on thematic or local issues, I stress the long-term impact of such reporting mechanisms as the result of a cumulative sequence across my predecessors' and successors' reports, which are always the fruit of dialogue with numerous stakeholders. The reporting tool that we are presenting today, 100 pages, is one that will allow the Church to offer victims and their communities an honest account of progress and persistent gaps over time, accompanied by recommendations for those who are in a position to do so, to fill these gaps. Regrettably, much of the Church remains without robust data collection practices or capacities, and yet data is key to our ability to promote an accountability. And therefore, we must commit to investing in the Church data collection infrastructure and resources. In short, this is primarily a tool for accountability over time. However, it also offers mechanisms for change in the short term. In the report, the Commission makes specific recommendations to each church entity that it covers. Alongside these recommendations, we assure those church entities of our availability to help and to accompany them in their implementation endeavors. The bona fide engagement and cooperation from church authorities on implementing these recommendations is crucial for systemic and lasting change to occur. The report also serves as a coordinating tool for sharing good practices while also calling church leadership, the faithful, and all those of goodwill to urge their implementation. This is what it means to create a true culture of safeguarding. We are all called to participate according to our respective roles, talents, and capacities. And finally, a note on the meaning of the depiction on the annual report front cover. Native to large parts of the African continent, the baobab tree is often known as the tree of life and is an important symbol of resilience and community. We believe that this might serve as a concrete sign of our support to each and every victim, whistleblower, or any other person in an atmosphere of trust and safety. With the change of mindset that accompanies our path to conversational justice, the Church can offer the protective environment that this tree symbolizes.
That was jurist Maud Dabuabukikyo, and that's all for this edition of News for Young People. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.